Second hour, Darren, Donnick, and Chase live from Pete and Terry's Tavern. Tonight it's the Predators and Flames. 7 o'clock puck drop, 6 o'clock pregame. Everything heard right here on 102.5 The Game. Hope everybody's having a good Thursday. It's sunny and beautiful outside. A little bit cold, but sunny and beautiful. Darren McFarland, Chase McCabe here on site. Willie Donnick will join us in a bit. By the way, if you would like to join the Predators on the road for a game this year, as we close out the month of February on Saturday, yeah, when we go on the air on Monday, we will be in March. Yikes, I can't believe it. But the Predators are hitting the road, and they will be at Nationwide Arena on Saturday, March 14th, to take on the Blue Jackets. You have an opportunity to be with us, 102.5 The Game, and the Preds, and go along on the trip. Should be fun. Last year was in St. Louis. It's a great trip. This year, it's in Columbus. Tickets are on sale now. To purchase, visit thegamenashville.com. The trip is organized by simplyafan.com. You can also go there and look for other upcoming sports adventures. And the transportation is provided not by Chase, but by Gray Line of Tennessee.
No, I won't be driving.
Chase driving that bus.
No, that would be bad. But it'll be fun. I'll be on the bus. I'll be a passenger with all of you. So sign up. Go get your tickets. Buy them now. It's a great package that you get the bus trip, the tickets to the game and hotel and all that, all with one flat fee. So thegamenashville.com has all that info. And we're going to have a blast. And, Ryan likes to be the organizer. And so he'll pick the movies out and get up in front of the bus and do a little speech. And I make fun of him and the people laugh when I make fun of him. So it's a good time. You won't want to miss that. So
it does sound like fun.
Yeah.
So go buy those tickets. Go to thegamenashville.com. We will speak with Elliot Friedman today at 1 o'clock. We always enjoy our weekly chats with him. He's with Sportsnet, Hockey Night in Canada, 31 Thoughts. And after that interview, we will give you an opportunity to answer a question from that interview, and we will give you tickets to see the Predators and the Avalanche here on Saturday night to close out the month of February.
That'll be a cool prize.
Yeah.
Because that should be a fun game. Look, they got back-to-backs now, two games in a row that are going to be huge, and every game is really huge for the Predators moving forward, but those two will be good. We got one on the text line that we didn't come up with, and I guess it's kind of a big deal, but it didn't work out, so we didn't bring it up. Randy Moss to the Titans.
Yeah, that's good. That's actually really good. Yeah. By the way, you can text us at any point in the show. We try to pass along your text. We ask that. Put your name on there so we can give you credit. That's 615-737-1025, 737-1025. It's the number you can call in or text us.
Yeah. But that's a good one,
right? Really is a good one. That was in 2010.
It was Fisher's last year.
2010.
I never understood.
I'll never forget where I was. I don't think I've even told this story, I don't think. When I found out.
Were you in between stops at this point?
I was. No. Yes. Yes, okay. I was.
So you were in between stops at this
point. Yes, I was. I was doing a show with Brad Hopkins.
Okay.
And at the time, in 2010, I was traveling on the road games. So I went every road game for the Titans for TitanInsider.com, and I was coming back from San Diego. It was when they got beat by the Chargers.
Yeah.
Philip Rivers was thrown to a bunch of practice squad guys and carved up the Titans. And I was in, I think we made a stop in, I want to say Salt Lake City. I think that's where I was. Salt Lake City. So I was one stop before coming to Nashville. And that's when the news broke. And I was like, that was on a Monday morning.
Yeah. Well, because the reports had surfaced, I think, that the Titans had put a claim, that they were going to put a claim in on Randy Moss, and Ricky in Clarksville was the one that texted in on that. But I think the reports had come out that the Titans were going to put a claim in. And then all of us, because this was, Twitter was around. I had a Twitter account at that point, but it was early.
Very, very early.
It wasn't what it is today. And I remember watching SportsCenter, and the reports are coming out like the Titans are going to end up with Randy Moss. And I'm thinking that they're going to the Super Bowl. I mean, that's the piece they need, because you're going to, at the time, Kenny Britt was there. You're going to have Kenny Britt, Randy Moss. And then there was that whole thing of, well, you couldn't put them, you know, they played kind of the same position, so you couldn't have them on the field at the same time. I'm like, what? What kind of logic is that?
If you remember, that game was on Halloween.
Yeah.
And the significance of the signing, now it'll all come together. So that would have been on November 1st when I was traveling back.
Okay.
From San Diego. That also dates, right? They were playing the Chargers. So I was in San Diego. And so this would have been on November 1st. What were the Titans? What was that week for the Titans?
Bye week.
Bye week.
Yep. Because I do remember it happened in the bye week. And he played four games, or was suited up for four games, I think.
Well, they had eight games. It was half. It was the bit. It was right halfway? In the middle of the season, so they had eight games left.
They barely, like, if you go and look, like, they barely used him.
Well, they only won one game since coming back. From that, that was the last year of Jeff Fisher. They won one game after the bye week. In eight. They went 1-7 out of the bye week.
Yep, so they were, because he played for three
teams.
Their
one win was the Texans here. That's because Jeff Fisher always got up to play the Texans.
So here is the stat line for Randy Moss with the Tennessee Titans. Eight games played, started four. He was targeted 16 times, six receptions, 80 yards, zero touchdowns.
That was he did have a touchdown from Rusty Smith, but he got called for OPI.
Yep, they called it back.
That was here.
Yep. But he played for three
teams
that year.
Wasn't that in the Texans game?
I think it was.
The one win?
Yep.
I think that was the Texans game. He got hit with OPI. It was a long touchdown, too. Mm-hmm. It was like 40 yards or something.
And then he retired, and then he came back with San Francisco a year later. But
and now his son just won a national championship.
And is going to get drafted.
With LSU. But, yeah, it was the San Diego game. It was a Halloween game. And I was coming back on November 1st, first thing in the morning. And it, wherever the stop was first, there was one stop before Nashville at the airport. I remember I was sitting there waiting, and that's when the news hit. And you're right. There was Twitter. But social media was a lot different than it is today. I do know that. It was still very, very young, very early on. In Twitter. Fair to say?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there was news being broken, or news being reported, I should say, not necessarily broken, but it wasn't, like, you didn't have everybody just going nuts on Twitter like they do now.
But who would you say it was, Ricky in Clarksville?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good, Ricky. That's one we overlooked. And by the way, send us, there's got to be something else that
I'm trying to think of some other ones, like,
but that was at the time, even though that was a team that went nowhere. Although, let's see, what were they at the break? Even though I told you they went into the bye week with a loss, they were 5-3. So they were 5-2 going into that game and lost. So they were 5-3 going into the bye week, and they went 1-7 coming
and then
out.
That was it. And that was coming off the year, you know, the year before.
The 09 season was the Chris Johnson 2,000-yard season, but they finished 8-8.
Right. And then the year before that,
they started off the year
Baltimore.
0-6.
Yeah.
0-6 and finished 8-8.
They lost to New England.
59. That was a 59-0 game.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that, by the way, how about that? They lost 59-0 to the Patriots, and that was going into the bye week.
Yep.
How would you like to have to let that one sit and stew on that for 2 weeks?
Well,
getting housed in
Foxborough. They finished 8-8.
You're right. They obviously
so
motivated
something worked.
It obviously motivated them for sure. All right, we will come back. Terry Crisp at the bottom of the hour. More of Darren, Donnick, and Chase next. So we've been talking a lot this morning here on Darren, Donnick, and Chase. Terry Crisp at the bottom of the hour here at Pete and Terry's Tavern. That Jeff Darlington all over ESPN today, who was their fine NFL reporter. And I remember Jeff when he used to be the beat reporter down in Miami for the Dolphins. Yep. In fact, that 2010 season we were just talking about, their game out of the bye was down in Miami. And I remember leaving the stadium, walking to the rental car with Jeff Darlington. We had parked.
Oh, really?
Close to, yeah. And we were one of the last ones out of the stadium that day after that. By the way, that was a bad loss. A bad loss. Kerry Collins got hurt in the first half. Vince Young came in, and Miami.
Was that when they – okay, so they had Kerry Collins, Vince Young, Rusty Smith. Mm-hmm. Was that the year that they had to start Matt Mock, or was that earlier?
Mm-mm.
That was, I think, a couple years earlier.
It wasn't that year.
I think Floyd, actually.
But I walked out of the stadium. So that was the first game out of that 2010 year after the bye week, and they went down to Miami and lost to the Dolphins. Kerry Collins started the game. Vince Young finished the game. It did not go well for the Titans. And Jeff Darlington is a fine reporter, and he has been putting out there all day today that he is currently operating under the belief that Tom Brady will enter free agency and play somewhere other than New England next season. Now, that is Jeff Darlington and the people that he has talked to. He has also said that he is under the belief that there are people close in Tom Brady's circles, that Tom Brady has told them that they need to grasp that he is going somewhere else. Now, we told you the latest odds. The odds are the odds makers still believe that the Patriots are the still pretty sizable favorite for the landing spot of Tom Brady. But we were just kind of talking about what would that mean for this market if the news we find out in 2 weeks, we wake up and Tom Brady is going to Nashville to play for the Titans. And I don't think there's any doubt that it would be the biggest sports story we've had in this market since having professional sports more than two decades ago. And we've brought up some good ones. In fact, Elijah texted us during the break. Elijah's a huge basketball fan.
Yeah.
And Elijah, you said what?
I said it's not necessarily in this market, but it's in the state, and it might be the most completely random one I can think of, and that was that one time that Allen Iverson was a Grizzly for three games.
Yeah. You're right. That's a good
that
one.
That is a fact, but that is not going to make our list. Sorry.
Honorable mention.
Yeah, we got a text on the text line that, again, not this market, but Brett Favre to the Vikings. Okay, same type of – I get it, but it's not Nashville. So.
Yeah, we're talking about this market, something directly affecting
Yancey Thigpen.
This market. No, Yancey did not. And I'm not saying that because it didn't work out. I'm saying that was not.
What about Pickens?
No. I get it. They had name value, and it was a big deal. It was not to the big deal that we're talking. Eddie George to the Cowboys. P.K. Subban, straight-up trade for Shea Weber. Shea Weber was the captain.
Would you put
P.K. Subban was, you know, a name that everybody knew in the league. Those are huge deals.
Would you put Matt Hasselbeck in this category when they signed him?
No.
I mean,
once again, these are all good, but we're talking about the upper tier.
Right.
Upper tier. I mean – Barry Trotz, because it was 16 years here. That was a big deal. Jeff Fisher was a big deal.
Sure.
Big deal. As we've been talking about this 2010 season, that's when it came to an end. Those were two massive stories in this market. I mean, Ryan Johansson for Seth Jones, because Seth Jones was, you know, the third pick, fourth pick overall. And so that was a big deal. For the Predators, and they got their, you know, everybody had been clamoring for a big centerman, you know, a number one centerman, and that's what they made the trade for. So that was a big, big deal. Paul Kariya, as we stated earlier, the significance at the time, what that meant to this market to have the first big name choose Nashville. He didn't get traded here. He chose the Predators.
Right.
That was a big deal then because the fan base – if we took one, we took hundreds of calls saying, when are the Predators going to get a big-name player in this market to play for the Predators? And Paul Kariya was that guy. Peter Forsberg, they traded for him at the deadline. That was a big deal at the time. It didn't work out. But at the time, people went crazy. It was Peter Forsberg for goodness sakes. You know, he had been a really successful player, especially in Colorado, and he's a Hall of Famer, and that was a big deal. I mean, I'll never forget doing that player show at Blackstone.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
R.I.P. Blackstone.
I know, I miss that place.
I know. Spent a lot of time in there. The fire marshal came in for that player show when Peter Forsberg was Darcy Hordachuk's guest. Man, he would have shut that place down, man. People were hanging from the ceiling to get in that place for that show.
Yeah.
That was a big deal. This one would be the biggest.
No question.
And so the stuff we're bringing, these Yancey Thigpen, Carl Pickens, yes, that's newsworthy. They just did not stack up to the ones we're talking about.
Yeah. Look,
and Allen Iverson, no disrespect, Elijah, it didn't.
No,
it doesn't make the cut.
It doesn't, and I'm sure.
I'm not even sure where would it stack up in Memphis if they were doing this very topic in Memphis. Where would that stack up there? I don't know the answer.
I mean, it had to be pretty high just because of like who Allen Iverson was, but he was like on the back end of his career. I mean, he got shipped out after three games and finished the season in Philadelphia barely. But he was definitely way past his prime. But he was here just for, like, 5 minutes, and it was the name. So I don't even know where it'd rank in Memphis. But the name alone, I guess, carries a little bit of weight to where it'd rank.
No doubt. I mean, when you say Allen Iverson, people will perk up. No doubt.
Yeah, they definitely sold some jerseys. That's for sure.
Yes. Yes, he did. But this one, we all believe, if something like this were to really happen, it'd be the number one story. It just tells you the significance of this.
Yeah.
How big this actually would be. It would be the number one story that we've ever had in this market.
Is it one of those?
And that's no disrespect for all the ones we've laid out, because they're right there at the top, and we talked about it earlier. I'm still confused on what actually would be number one if we had to choose right now today. Like, if I made you choose, like you had to pick one, number one, what would you pick?
Probably Subban for Weber.
Okay.
That's probably where I go. That's what's so interesting about this is we can't be definitive on what the number one is. If this happens, we know what the number one is.
That just tells you how big it is. Now, because
what you said earlier, Peyton Manning would have been.
It would have been, no doubt. But it was a courtesy visit. Yeah. It was never going to happen.
Right.
But if it did happen, it would have been number one. And it would still be number one today.
Yeah,
and probably absolutely. Always would be number one just because of the significance of Peyton Manning in this market and the state.
Yeah, and I'm trying to – I feel like there's one that we're still forgetting that hasn't been – let's see, the text line. Austin says Eric Decker, not the same. Patrick Hornquist for James Neal, Kathleena.
That's
a pretty big one.
It's in the discussion. It's not up or high enough to the top to be in this group. It's definitely there. There was definitely a ripple effect.
Yep.
Tyler, when that deal went down.
Tyler said Randy Moss, which we talked about earlier. So, that's definitely, even though it didn't work, and for it to be a big deal, it doesn't necessarily have to work. Like Brady could come here and it not work. It's
still
going to
be the big deal because we're talking about when it first happens.
Yeah.
Right.
And it probably would be a bigger deal if it didn't work.
One that we haven't even brought up is when the Predators brought in.
You're getting choked up for it. I know what you're
I'm getting
say.
All choked up when the Predators brought in Terry Crisp. I mean, that was
a big deal.
That was a huge ripple effect in this market whenever that was announced.
Yeah.
So, wait a minute. We will speak with Terry Crisp on the other side, as I just got choked up saying that. On the other side of Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Darren, Donick, and Chase, and when you're doing a show at Pete and Terry's Tavern, you should have on one of the duos. So let's do that. Let's bring in Terry Crisp. He's brought the passion. He's sitting here at the table with us. Crispy, how you doing?
I am doing great, guys. Thank you for having me on board with you all. And when I'm playing with two stars like you guys, I think I'll be the centerman.
Really?
You guys be the wingers, yeah, because the centerman directs traffic.
Okay.
So, you know, the big fella. Darren, I hate to tell you, kid, but your job's to go to the front of the net.
Yeah. That's a good spot for me.
You go in the corners and get the puck out to me. I'll do the shooting, okay?
In other words, you're bringing the skill.
I'm bringing the skill. You guys are sort of like, yeah, get the job done.
We're blue collar. We know that.
I know. You guys at least admit it.
We're okay with that. Crispy, bring that mic real close to you because we want everybody to hear you.
Crispinator.
So let's talk about, before we get into this, we were talking about some things like big stories in this market since there's been professional sports here more than two decades. So I want you to hit, because you were right in the middle of a lot of the stuff we brought up. Like, explain to the listeners, we have so many new people to this town, or people have been here 5 years or less, the significance of Paul Kariya when he chose to come play for the Predators.
Oh, man, that was huge. I mean, we were looking for something, and we knew coming in that we were going to have to do a lot of legwork and a lot of chicken dinners and whatnot. And we loved them, Pete and I and the guys that came first, to get to meet the people and whatnot. But when they announced, and as you said, the key phrase was when he chose to come, Paul Kariya, who at that given time was one of the elite players and has been and will be always renowned. When he said he wanted to come here to, and I'm not going to use the phrase, yeah, I will say it, a non-hockey market, but we were just getting our feet wet, that was huge. That was one of the big things. Since then, we've had guys come along. Like
right, like now we don't even talk about it hardly
exactly
anymore.
But back then, I mean, you were here. I was away for a while. The ticket sales just went sky high. Jersey sales went sky high. Everything took off hockey for us rather than, remember, we were always fighting with the Titans for airtime, et cetera. So, yeah, Paul Kariya probably was, at that given time, the biggest happening for us in hockey.
We know it had a huge ripple effect here, but just to show you the significance, it even had a huge ripple effect in the hockey community out abroad. They were like, whoa, Paul Kariya is going to go to the Predators?
Well,
it's one thing here for it to have that effect, but in hockey, you know, out in the hockey world, and have everybody else talking about
it. Especially when you're not traded. I mean,
right.
He wasn't traded here. He wasn't forced to come here. He had options. He was looking over it, and he said, no, I've looked over. And you know Paul Kariya. If you ever met him, I mean, he is very calculating, very focused, very businesslike, and very smart. And I enjoyed Paul Kariya immensely. But when he made a decision, it wasn't just a knee-jerk decision. He looked over the team, looked where he wanted to come, and he chose Nashville, which we were very fortunate and lucky for.
Terry, I always appreciated. He didn't necessarily want or was looking to do interviews. If he'd never had to do an interview, he would be okay with that. But when he did do interviews, he was fantastic.
He was
great. Like, he understood, like, if I'm doing it, I'm going to give you everything I got.
Yep.
I'd rather not, but if I'm going to, I'm going to give you a good interview.
I think one of my biggest delightful things or opportunities I had since coming here to interview was when he came here and Timu Solani was playing for Anaheim and was coming in. And they hadn't met each other for a bit and hadn't been together for a while. And Paul didn't do a lot of interviews. So I went to Timu Solani and I said, Timu, could I interview you tonight with Paul Kariya? And he says to me, well, yeah, if you get Paul to do it, I'll do it. So I walk down the hallway. I get a hold of Paul. I said, Paul,
listen to this. This is going to be a veteran move.
I said, would you do an interview with me tonight with Timu Solani? He says, well, if you can get Timu Solani to do it, I'll do it. Hello. I did the interview. It was the most fun, one of the best interviews I ever had doing for him. And they were hilarious because they had been Batman and Robin for years together, et cetera. So in my career of coming here, bringing those two together and being the first one to get to do them, I was happy. I didn't get a raise, mind you.
Didn't change your bank account.
What's up with that?
But you always remember that.
I always remember that, yes.
You are somebody that been around the game your whole life, played it, coached it, and now doing from this side. You always talk about bringing the passion in a certain way to play, and that's really what John Hines has been preaching since he arrived here. So when you see this team and you know the talent and all the battles and everything they've been through the last 5 years, and you have a coach that's constantly preaching what you have to do game in and game out to win at this level, what goes through your mind?
Probably, what's the word I'm looking for, how frustrated you get as a coach. I can allude to the fact and probably know what John Hines is going through because I listen to every interview he has because he's new here and we have to learn in a hurry what he's like, what he brings, whatever. And everything he's saying, I totally agree with. If I was coach, and had to say certain speeches or whatever, I like what he's saying. The biggest thing to do is we as coaches can say it. We got to somehow convey it to the players. And we do our best one-on-ones. We do our best in group meetings. We'll do our best being the good guy. Try the bad guy, whatever. But I've learned through all years of coaching is that it's the individual. They're the ones who have to dig in deep and decide that they're going to be and know your role and accept your role, but become that role. And we keep saying that Forsberg, Duchesne, Johansson, Smitty, Yossi, Ekholm, Ellis, go on down that list of they're your guns. They're your cannons. Okay, that's a tough title to have, but you're good enough. You don't just hand them that title. That's what we're looking for. That's what you look for. Now you go on down. Here's your penalty killers. This is what they're here for. Let's become the best. When I was penalty killing and Skillsy, Hal Gill, I took pride. Yep. Took pride in that every time I wanted to. That's what I'm thinking right now has to happen with these guys is that, you know what? Philip Forsberg, we're lucky to have one of the most talented players in the NHL in our city, on our team, being him.
Yep.
In the top 10, I'll say. But having said that and given him those accolades, I know it's tough. I know it's hard. But they're quite capable of doing it. They're quite capable of being our cannons and running against the big units, the McKinnons and the McDavids and coming tonight, Tkachuk's or Goudreau's line. These guys, when they put their mind to it, the ones I mentioned, they're just as good.
Yeah.
They just got to bring it. Bring it.
So how do you maximize that? How do you get the absolute best? Because you had to push buttons when you were a coach. I mean, I've told you I watched that Joe Buck interview with Brett Hull, who's now here in town all the time, and he talked about that mean SOB Terry Crisp. But he looks back now and appreciates what you did because he knew what you were trying to do. You didn't necessarily – maybe the light bulb wasn't going on then – but he saw later what you're – so how do you get, you know, like you just said, like Phil Forsberg is a guy that everybody knows and looks at, and that's a guy that should be flirting with 35, 40 goals a year. Like he has that talent. I don't think that's absurd to say that.
No, it's not. I love him. I love his skill. Remember when he first came in here and was scoring those 30-some goals? When he got the puck, the whole crowd in our building came to their feet.
Yep.
Because they knew something was going to happen. Yossi is quite capable of doing that with the puck now. That's what we have to have now coming down this stretch run. Those guys take the bull by the horn. You know what you're going to get out of your foot soldiers every night. You're going to get that from Grimaldi and Arvey and et cetera, Watson and Beninos and all them. They're going to give you that. You have to have your cannons firing if you're going to win.
Terry Crisp is with us, and you bring up Roman Yossi. Sometimes I think it's changed now that John Hines has taken over and he's getting help. Ryan Ellis is back. But I felt like for a while Yossi was trying to do too much. He was trying to put the team on his back. That's what the captain does. That's what Roman Yossi has always done. And now he has kind of backed off a little bit, done his job, but he's also getting some help, and I think that's good.
And you know what I think happens also, and as a coach you have to be very leery of this, you're coming in. The system is not working for the way that the team was playing, so you have to tweak it. And like Coach Hines said, he's going to tweak it a little bit in that. And maybe you ask Yossi, saying, listen, we're struggling in our end. We're really struggling. We can't get out. We're not doing it. Ellis is hurt. We've got a young kid, Fabro, the other ones. We need you to lead us. Well, now Yossi's thinking, well, boy, I don't want to be down ice all the time if the coach wants me in the back end doing more there. Don't take as many rushes. Not that you're trying to corral them or stop them, but you want them a little more aware of the defense. And I think Yost was trying to do both ends of the ice as good, and you're right. He got sort of sidetracked from what he does best. So if you give him a defenseman, then say it's Darren, and you say, okay, Darren, you're playing with Yossi. He loves to go, and he can go, and he will go. Sorry, you're not that good. You're staying home. No, nothing against you, son, but you're the home man.
Yeah.
Okay, let him go. And I think that's what Yost had for a while. And then somehow we got a little sidetracked in what we were wanting to do. Put him back to it. He can do it.
He can do it, and he's done it. goaltending. We've seen UC Saros as of late. He's been getting a majority of the starts, but when Pecorine has been called upon, he has been that old Pecorine that we're used to seeing. He has been that guy that stands on his head. He got that point in Chicago. There's no other way to put it. What do you make of how John Hines is using his goaltenders right now? Because I wouldn't say that UC Saros has taken the job. It's just for now, that's been the hot hand.
And John Hines, he came in to a spot where he was expected to make some changes and move this thing forward. And he's doing his best on that one. But I don't want to hear anybody come near me here or on the concourse, wherever I am, and tell me that our goaltending is not getting the job done, because they'll have their hands full. I didn't win many scrums, but I'll tell you right now, we have two of the best goalies going, and you cannot lay anything at their feet. If you look at anybody that's watched hockey and looks at the videos, and I sit in that desk and I make my notes, and then I have to burn them right as soon as the game's over because I can't get them published, because then I'm really in trouble. But how many times we've hung our goalies out to dry? The last game, Saros, I'm saying four breakaways. Not scrums, point-blank scrums that they usually get, but breakaways from our breakdown of our guys not doing their job, not picking up the guy, not watching in front. And how many times have you guys and I have said, wow, Rene, another point-blank save. Saros, another point-blank. Then the other night, late in the game, forget the guy who has that breakaway. If he scores, Ellis scores, makes it 2-2.
Yep.
About 20 seconds later, a guy's 2-on-0 breakaway, I believe, it wasn't in tandem, coming down. Those are the kinds of things that we got to stop. Those are the kind of things. But we're blessed and in the position we're in now because Rene and Saros have bailed us out.
You've, as Darren said, you've been around this game for a long time. You've been fired before. You know everything.
You have to bring everything up, you know.
Well, I know.
Discuss everything, you know.
You've gone through it. You know what it's
don't make
like.
You a bad person, you know.
I didn't say that.
Don't ask the players. Look at Darren. He's just laughing over there. He's howling. Wipe that. No.
No, he's going to have to wipe it off his shoes himself.
I had a very good question all set up to go. Why in this sport, why in hockey is it that the coaching change mid-season or wherever, it seems to work? And it's not that Peter Laviolette was necessarily doing anything wrong. It was just now you have a different voice, and they've won 9 of 14 or whatever it is, and you do feel like that there are some different things, albeit still areas in which to improve.
Yeah, and you know what the biggest thing I always said was the fact that, and you hear this phrase so often, the coach has been fired. Now you'll hear the players say it, and a lot of them don't mean it. Mm-hmm. They say, well, now it's strictly up to us.
Right.
They blame the coach. They took the coach out of the picture. Well, guys, now it's up to us. Now it's going to lay on us. We'll rest on us. Well, in all my years, I'd like to know how many of those guys got fired after that 10 games later, or how many of those guys didn't get the job done that hadn't got the job done when the other coach got fired. Go on down the line. So I think that for a while, they know the coach has the hammer. He's the hammer man now, because the GM just fired the other guy. This is the man that's in control right now. So he has it doesn't matter who it is, whether it's your cannons or your foot soldiers, he can do what he wants with them because he's been given the job to do it. That wears down. That wears off. Players aren't dumb. They pretty soon gear into what has to be done and whatnot. And I'm going to go back to it again. And I have no other explanation but this. It all boils down to the guys in the dressing room. And you guys have heard me say this. And I heard a guy, I don't even know who he is, on the air the other night, something. And he says, I've been thinking they should put a great big mirror out where they walk out of the dressing room, every player. I said that for 3 years. Put a great big huge mirror, and every guy walking out of that dressing room onto the ice has to look into that mirror because it's right there. You can't avoid it. Put it where they can't miss it. Take a look in the mirror. Look to yourself in the eye and say, okay, what's my job tonight? What's my job tonight?
There's something.
And maybe a lot of times after the game, come back and stop in front of that mirror and say, sorry, mirror, I lied to you.
There's a crack in it, too. Yeah. What's going on?
No, great big huge bullet mark.
when you left Tampa, did you blame Jerry Helper for that?
When I left Tampa?
Yeah.
No, I would like to, but I knew I was wrong because Jerry Helper's the one who got me here. Jerry Helper's the one who got me hired here, along with Pete Weber. So,
well, Jerry's sitting
every day. He is there too. every
Good
day,
move.
But you see, every day Pete and I are very, very thankful to Jerry Halpert because we let him buy lunch.
it's sort of nice of you guys.
Cool. Yeah, it is. I thought we're nice of Pete.
Gentlemen.
And I to, yeah.
Gentlemen.
Thank you.
Let's end with this. I don't know, Elijah, have Kevin Pollak, if you can, ready. I don't know if you can do this last minute, and I apologize. But, Terry, I brought you into the discussion a couple weeks ago. We have Elliot Friedman on every Thursday at 1. Ironically, he's coming on today at 1. And the Predators that night were in Calgary taking on the Flames. So this is, what, 3 weeks ago? And I brought up, just we were having fun. Elliot, that's what I like about it. He has fun with us as well. We get into a lot of nuts and bolts and hockey, but we have fun. And I said, Elliot, you're a fine Canadian up there. You do a lot of great work up there, Hockey Night in Canada. Is it Calgary or Calgary? And he just went on this, oh, no, you know, no, nobody says Calgary. It's ridiculous, this whole notion. He goes on the soapbox of nobody says Calgary. Right, guys? And I was like, well, I mean, that's actually not true. I was like, you know, Terry Crisp says Calgary. I've heard Chris Mason's from Red Deer. He said Calgary before. And so we had fun with that. Elijah, do you have – so that night, obviously, is Predators Flames. Elijah, do you have Kevin Pollak announcing a penalty during that game?
I sure do.
Could you play that for Terry, please?
Of course.
Here is Yossi stick handling. And there's going to be a penalty call here. Let's get it at 8:09 of the period. Kevin Pollak will make the call.
29 Calgary, 2 minutes tripping.
And I just watched my Twitter feed explode that night, sitting in the radio station, doing getting ready to do the intermission because it was close to the end of the period. And boy, did we have fun with Elliot Friedman the next week.
And, you know, I don't know. It's like Toronto. If you're Canadian, it's Toronto. Short for everybody takes shortcuts on their names now. Louisiana, Louisie, whatever, up to Shelbyville, Shelbyville.
Shelbyville.
You guys know better than I do.
Louisville.
But Louisville. For some reason, and we spent time, but it's, to me, it's always been Calgary.
Yeah.
And I cut it up in two words. But if you're Canadian, you've got to get out past. It's Calgary. Calgary. It's not Calgary. Calgary. It's not Toronto. Toronto. You spell Toronto. T-R-O-N-T-O. Toronto. Toronto? No, put an A in the end of it. Yeah.
But I felt bad after bringing it up that day. I was like, I've always had fun with that. And then he said that, and I was like, oh, well, he's up in Toronto. I mean, you know, maybe I shouldn't say Calgary anymore. And then Pollak did it that night. I was like, yes! I can say Calgary for the rest of my life because of Crispy and Kevin Pollak. I don't care what Elliot says. So anyway, hey, thanks for stopping by. Good to see you.
Hey,
thanks for bringing the passion.
Always my pleasure. Always. Have you guys keep up the good work, and you're not getting a raise.
Well, Jerry's here to buy your lunch, so accept.
Oh, yeah, Mr. Helper isn't here, and he's got no, you know what it is? You know the little sweaters you get with the little crocodile on them, the little alligator arms?
Yeah.
Can't quite reach the bill.
Well, we've seen that commercial.
You saw the commercial?
Which is great.
Thanks, guys.
I'd love to take this. I can't reach you. Terry Crisp, everybody. Good to talk to him, as always. We'll come back and wrap up the second hour next. Good stuff from Crispy, as always. He's leaving Pete and Terry's tavern. He's leaving his tavern.
He's leaving.
He is.
He's leaving happy.
So I guess we did our job. He's leaving happy.
Sometimes the off-the-air stories with Terry Crisp might be the best ones.
Sometimes?
Most of the time.
Let's just say.
HBO, right, Crispy? HBO. We'll get on HBO one day.
No doubt about it. We will talk with Richard Deitch coming up at noon. We're excited about that. He had a really good and by the way, that would have been interesting to bring that up with Crispy. He did We'll bring it up with Richard about Miracle on Ice. So
yeah,
he's got a really nice piece on that. Ken Drysdale. So we will Ken Dryden, excuse me, and we'll talk about that with Richard at noon. Elliot Friedman at 1 o'clock. We were tonight. Tonight is big, and I know
it's
they're
huge.
All big. Okay, I get it. We've been saying that they're all big at this time of the year. Ryan Ellis told us Tuesday night after the win over Ottawa, like, he loves this time of year because everything gets amped up. You start getting closer to that playoff, everything's starting to feel like playoffs, right? You get into that, that mode. There's a lot of desperate teams, and everybody's jockeying for a position, whether it's to win a division, whether it's to get into a wild card spot, whether it's on the outside looking in. You get a lot of desperate teams, and so he really talked about how he loves this time of year. I mean, they're about to wrap up on Saturday, the month of February, and they will be going into their final full month of the season. That's it. And it happens to be their busiest month of the season, March. But you get kind of that desperate feel, and I suspect tonight is going to be, with the way where Calgary and Nashville are in the standings and what's at stake, I think you're going to it's going to feel a lot like what Ryan Ellis was describing in postgame on Tuesday night.
Yeah, look, it's a playoff game. I mean, ESPN Plus is even going to have it. So you can, if you have ESPN Plus and you're out of this market, you can watch that game. But it's a big deal. And the schedule is full of games that the Predators will pay attention to. Dallas is at Boston tonight, so that one's important. Minnesota at Detroit. Washington at Winnipeg. So Winnipeg will play. And you got to keep winning to keep staying ahead of those teams that are chasing you. And also, head-to-head, you know, put them in the first wild card spot. But this is going to have a playoff feel. I talked to Ryan Johansson earlier. You'll hear that in pregame tonight. He you know, I asked him about this game specifically. He said they're all important this time of year. But, yeah, you've got a team that's right next to you fighting for the same thing. That is going to have a playoff feel. I mean, that's exactly what this is going to be. You're going to have two teams that you're going after the same prize. So that amps things up. And I feel like that the Predators respond well in situations like that. You know, I was a little – they beat Columbus, they beat Ottawa, but those games were a lot closer than they really should have been, in my opinion. I think there are times where they just – I don't want to say play down, but kind of do. And games like this, they get up for. And so I feel like that this could be a really good opportunity for them to continue – the winning ways, to put together a, you know, a winning streak. They have a point streak going. Keep that, you know, keep that moving forward, but really try and take control of this wild card situation like we've been talking about. Of one of these four teams, somebody's got to take it. And I think that the Predators have a great opportunity to do that in their home barn tonight. Get the energy up in this place. Get it going. And a big win, a good start for the Preds, I think can do that. And get some of the energy back in Bridgestone Arena.
I did want to tell you what we were doing tomorrow. Tomorrow's going to be a lot of fun. Of course, the inaugural MLS season is upon us. It'll be Saturday over at Nissan Stadium. There'll be a game here against Colorado and the first ever MLS game of Nashville SC at Nissan Stadium on Saturday night as well. So it's going to be a lot of fun in our city right where we are here downtown on Saturday. But tomorrow, to kind of kick things off, to get you ready for Saturday, we're going to be at Tin Roof on DeMumbrian, which also is just right up the street from where we are, not far at all from here. We will be doing our show there live from 10 to 2. The afternoon show will be there from 2 to 6. And we want you to stop by, say hello, because every hour we're going to be giving away a pair of lower bowl tickets to Saturday's match, Atlanta United, Nashville SC. Happy hour starts at 2 p.m. There's going to be great food and drink specials, and so the kickoff party begins tomorrow, starting with our show at 10 o'clock at Tin Roof on DeMumbrian, and we will have 8 hours of live programming there getting you ready for Saturday's game. And so come hang out with us tomorrow at Tin Roof on DeMumbrian. Like I said, a chance for you to win tickets every single hour, so that should be a lot of fun.
Yep, it'll be cool. We'll have Gina there from Promotions that'll be able to sign you up, so come in and see us, say hi, say hello to her, and try and win some tickets every hour. Going to be neat.
Richard Deitch from The Athletic will kick things off in the third hour of Darren, Donick, and Chase. We talk to him next on ESPN 102.5 The Game.